Welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Sykes.
Well, good afternoon. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone.
So we are back in Christmas preparation season. The stores are ready. All you have to do is show up and pull out your credit card and keep the economy going.
Make everybody smiling, aren't they?
They are. Yeah. Unfortunately, you may have to dash in and out. Just be sure you're not wearing a mask. Well, you have to wear a mask when you go in. How do you do that? just walk slowly so they know you're not a smash and grab person. I guess that takes care of it. Anyway, we're down here at the end of the year. And the end of the year is the time where the market swamis come out of the closet.
Boy, do they ever. They come out in force, and everybody's got a prediction. Everybody's got a prediction about anything you can think about. It's out there.
So we ran across this article with a quote from Niels Bohr. I don't know. I have no idea who he is. Do you know who he is, Perry?
Not sure. No, not sure.
No, but this is classic. Market predictions are difficult, especially when they're about the future.
There you go.
Well, duh. Yes, they are. So that's one of the reasons we don't do predictions, is because basically they are a flip of the coin. And you know, sometimes you're going to get them right, and sometimes you're going to get them wrong, but that's not a way to deal with market portfolio structure or risk management. Yeah, let's flip the coin and see if this works out. And in some ways, some of the software programs that advisors use, and we've used in the past, Monte Carlo comes to mind, let's see how many possibilities we can create by mixing up all the rate of return numbers. It's kind of like having a whole bunch of confetti, throwing it up in the air and letting it come down to see how it lands. And just do that 1,000 times. You get 1,000 different patterns. And out of that, the software says, well, looks like 95% of the time you're going to be okay. Let's just pick one of these and assume that that's how things are going to turn out. I mean, it doesn't improve your probability of actually being able to achieve your goals, but it sure makes it look like somebody's really smart. We know there are probabilities, but it doesn't matter which one of those you pick in a Monte Carlo program as your preferred outcome, because the preferred outcome is always a positive one.
Of course, that's what everyone wants. But like you said, it doesn't matter if you run 1,000 outcomes or 10,000 outcomes. You don't get any closer to what's actually going to happen because no one can know that. And people really need to get their heads wrapped around that fact. And because especially in with modern financial planning software, there are all kinds of charts and graphs and spreadsheets laying out how much money you're going to make over the next 50 years. And it's just, you just have to take a guess and put a number in there and then run it out for all those years. No one knows if that can even happen, let alone what's most likely to happen.
Boy, you just reminded me of one of the flaws I found in some software I used to use and I quit using it immediately. But as a matter of fact, this is live call-in radio. If you want to talk to us, if you don't call in, we're just going to talk back and forth here for the entire hour.
We can do it. Yeah.
You can change the direction of the show by picking up the phone and dialing 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. But the point you just made, Perry, is one of the software programs I used to use. Would you figure out where you are now and what your goal was, and then it ran through what it called scenarios. But when I dug into it, what it basically did was say it would calculate your success by figuring out that you needed a rate of return of X. Well, the one that comes to mind is that you needed an annual return of 12.65% every year for the rest of your life, and you'll be just fine. Well, the probabilities of that are pretty slim.
Way, way, way down the list. Yeah, that is, in fact, you can virtually guarantee that scenario is not going to happen. And if that's what your whole plan's based on, you are need to get ready for disappointment.
So I had a conversation with a gentleman about his software this last week, because he's a salesman. He's calling us to see if we wouldn't be better off using their software.
Right.
And so let's talk about your assumptions that are built in here. What kind of assumptions do you have for another, let's say, Brexit happening? What about if Fed policy changes from where it is? How about the advent of another pandemic? Well, none of those are in there, because those are not predictable events. What is predictable is an average rate of return. Whether that's going to occur or not, well, that's a flip of the coin.
Right. That's only really predictable over long, long periods of time. So if you've got a 90-year average rate of return in there, that's fine, as long as you have 90 years on the other side too to let that work out. Otherwise, you may never see that return. So it's really kind of a pointless, you're just chasing your tail. It doesn't make any sense.
So if there is an area where predictions are highly reliable.
Yes.
And if that will make you feel better, it's easy to get and it's free. All you have to do is turn on your TV for the evening news and wait for the weatherman to come on. Because meteorologists are the most accurate predictors of the future, and their prediction's good for about 3 days.
About 3 days out. That's which made me wonder right away, where does that leave the old farmer's almanac? You know, making the predictions for years in advance. That doesn't look too good for them.
Surprisingly, if you do it often enough, yeah, I mean, you get some winners and people remember that. So where are we with regard to the market? And if you want to call us today, I mean, it's 800-465-8770. And we should remind you that you can register for the January stock market update. That's going to be on the 8th of January at 9 a.m. in the morning. It's a Saturday morning. And it will be our best estimate of conditions and what they look like for at least the near term as we begin a new year. But major institutional bankers are in the prediction business. They want predictions that make you happy, because that's how they sell product. And the eternal optimist exists on Wall Street at the firm known as Goldman Sachs. Next year, their estimate is to have the S&P 500 rise 9% to hit 5,100. Now, it's important to remember that Goldman Sachs had a similar optimistic prediction for 2000 as the tech bubble rolled over. And in 2008, as the real estate business bubble came to an end and stocks followed the downtrend.
Not exactly on top of that one either. Yeah. So it really doesn't matter who you are or how much money you have to pay analysts. Predicting the future, especially in relation to the investment markets, is not just difficult. It is impossible. And which is, like you said, Don, that's why we don't make predictions, and we don't base our portfolios on anyone's prediction anyway. I'm glad Goldman Sachs thinks next year is supposed to be a good year. I hope it is too, but you can't invest on that.
So they're making that forecast in the light of what I think would have to be consensus commentary anyway, about next year is facing decelerating growth, a tightening Fed, and rising real interest rates, causing expectations for below average returns. But their forecast is 9%, which is historic average. So how can you be wrong saying, well, next year we'll have historically average returns? It could be 9%. Maybe be better, maybe not quite there. But on average, we're going to end up with a 9% return. I mean, that's just basically flip the coin and let's pray we end up on the right side of it.
And then at the same time, say what a tough year it's going to be. So if it is, you can also mention that you mentioned that too. So as long as you keep talking out of both sides of out of your mouth, you got a better chance of being right on part of it anyway.
Well, every coin has two sides,
there
right?
There we go.
So just down the street on off of Wall and Broad is Morgan Stanley. And these guys have apparently, if they've had lunch together, it's been a very vocal discussion, I'm sure, because Goldman Sachs is saying the market's going up to 5,100 and Morgan Stanley is saying, no way, we're going to see 4,400. We're not going to go up 9. We're going to drop 10 or more.
11. That's different. Yeah.
So, Morgan Stanley's analyst says, we think there are a number of reasons to suggest the global equities serene progress of this last year will become more volatile. Earnings growth slows, bond yields rise, and corporations continue to fight the supply chain and higher cost of doing business. Reworded some of that because you get into the technical language. Yeah. So what do we have? We have earnings uncertainty. Goldman Sachs doesn't think so. We have high valuations known as price earnings ratios. Well, Goldman Sachs doesn't think that's a problem. We have higher bond yields. That means bonds lose value. Because interest rates go up, value goes down. It's a teeter-totter, and it's math. And unlike stock market, which is bitter buyers and sellers, you know, back and forth digitally, but back and forth, it's a demand-supply situation. Not so with bonds. Bonds is math. So when interest rates rise, bond values go down, Goldman says, nah, not a problem.
Doesn't matter.
It's not going to bother us. So there's the conflict that is always present within the market. That's part of the yin-yang process of back and forth and why the markets go up and down on a minute-by-minute basis, but certainly over days, weeks, and months. The issue is, what do you deal with them? And
right. You can choose a side. You can choose a side if you want. You can say, I think Goldman's right, or I think Morgan Stanley's right. Mostly, we think it doesn't matter. We watch what's going on in the market and then, you know, adjust to what happens as it actually unfolds instead of trying to make a move based on a prediction, you know, months and months ahead of time, which we know is highly likely to be incorrect. We are up against our first break here, Don. We got to get out of here and take a brief break. I'd like to remind everyone that our next market update is coming up Saturday, January 8th, 9 a.m. You can register for that by just going to irradio.com. That's irradio.com. Go to the webinar page and give that registration link a click. You'll get an email back. And then on January 8th, you just click that link and you will be live online with us. You'll be able to see the charts we're looking at. We're going to talk about, as we always do, kind of what's going on out there in the market right now, what we're looking at with our client portfolios. And we always have plenty of time for your questions. So if you have questions about the market or the economy, or you have questions about individual securities that you have in your portfolio, you'd like a second opinion, really good time to get it. And you can, like I said, you can see the charts we're talking about, see why we're thinking what we're thinking. It's well worth your time. And start off the new year right and get some good market information. Again, you can register for that at irradio.com. If you'd like to talk to us this afternoon, we'd love to talk to you. Give us a call at 800-465-8770. It's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Deck the halls with boughs of holly. Fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Tis the season to be jolly. Fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la.
Well, tis the season to be jolly. I never wanted to deck the halls with holly. I don't know if you ever handled holly. We used to have a holly tree. Man, there was nothing worse than having to go out and trim that thing. It does bite back. It's nasty stuff. Anyway, we went to break. We're talking about the forecast for the market for next year. And one of the things that people get latched onto, and in many ways it's often referred to as hindsight bias. This has happened, and I expect it to continue happening. And I have a need for a certain return in my portfolio in order to meet my expectations, and then it doesn't happen. I'm so anchored on the focused on the outcome that I want, I forget to ask the question about how are we actually going to get there, and what happens if as I would if I was driving cross country or to another state on a road trip. What would I do when I run into road construction detour required? People don't think about that happening in the stock market because it's often unpredictable. The big events are unpredictable. Brexit. Who knew Brexit was going to upset the market by almost 20% in a very short order?
Seemed like almost 10 years Brexit went on. It just never ended. It just kept rolling and rolling and rolling and changing, and it never went away. And that's one of those things that nobody saw coming, and all of a sudden it's just all over the place. And that's what happens to people. Like you said, Don, that the recency bias, especially if something happened to you, if something happened in your investment life, if you went through a bear market, if you have a fear of missing out because you missed a big investment, that becomes something that you anchor to solidly. You really have to be on guard against that, because it doesn't let you see clearly what's going on now. You're just focused on what happened before. And most of the time, that's really of not much value.
So we talk frequently about needing to have a process, which means you need rules. And your process is discipline to implement those rules, because you are in a disciplined manner on a regular schedule reviewing conditions and the data input to determine whether or not you need to make a decision, even when that decision feels maybe more than a little uncomfortable.
And most of the time it should. I don't remember who said it, but they always said if something's very comfortable, it's probably not profitable. So you're going to have to get out of your comfort zone a little bit and look at the data, look at the facts, and say, this doesn't really feel right now, but the numbers say it is, and that's where you go. That's what's important.
So surveys always have some sort of bias in them, and investor surveys are frequent. What's going on? How do investors feel? It's kind of, I bet they're almost as common as political surveys. But if we just go back a year ago, the top three concerns were all related to the pandemic, virus mutation, the vaccine side effects, and vaccination refusers, vax deniers, I guess what they call them.
Right.
But those things change. The key takeaway is that we don't know what's going to show up or how long it will last. So how are you prepared to deal with it? And that is the unique approach that we have taken with our portfolios. It's one we don't forecast. And believe it or not, the standard modern portfolio theory is a forecast. It's using long period returns, and turning around and flipping them forward and saying, well, this is what you should expect. I think that's a forecast.
It is a forecast, and it's a forecast that, Harry Markowitz, the guy that wrote that modern portfolio theory, said when he wrote it, he said, don't forget, there is no predictive value in anything that I've done here. So to use it that way is not proper, but that's par for the course right now. They're gonna do it anyway because it makes great marketing material. It just doesn't happen to jive with the theory.
So our vision is to quit using the last 80 years of data, and let's look at what's going on now.
There you go.
So we use what most people in the industry would consider a very short-term data period, because that's the only thing that matters. What's happening right now in the market? And let's balance or structure the portfolios that's responding to current market leadership instead of something that has been strong for 20 years but is perhaps on the way out. It's not doing well now, but it's been good for 20 years. So eventually maybe it's going to be good again. But we don't know. Let's wait until it is good again and then put it back in the portfolio. So as an individual investor, if you're running your own account or you're looking at your financial advisor for guidance, quit investing on forecasts. I mean, it's a flip of the coin. You can do that yourself. Biggest risk factor facing investors is not that forecasts will be wrong, because we know they will. It's that investors tend to marry their predictions and manage portfolios accordingly.
I can't even remember how many times we've seen someone come in with a portfolio that's just not working and explain why they are where they are. This is what I'm doing. You know, this is why I'm doing this. And it's like, well, you know, the first question's always, well, you know, how's that working out for you? You know, it's like you seem to be losing money hand over fist here. Don't you think a change is necessary? And once they step outside of that little reality bubble they've created for themselves, that this is why I'm doing this, and eventually it's going to work out because that's what they always hear, and they realize, well, wait a minute. Yeah, I'm just watching my money run out the door here. Why am I doing that? I should stop. This is not going well. Let's don't do this. And that is our point exactly. If your portfolio is working against you, stop doing whatever that is and make a change.
Well, that's one thing that modern portfolio theory doesn't really have built into it, is a stop loss.
Right, right.
I mean, it is, well, we know this has worked over time, so it's not working right now, but it will again someday, sooner or later. That's our hope. We just don't think that makes any sense. You lose capital, and it's really hard to get it back. We had, I was doing some writing this weekend because I do an end of week report for financial advisors. And one of the issues is the change that goes on in markets. And one of those big changes happening right now is with Facebook, now called Metaverse.
Right.
Because Facebook itself changed, well, the demographics of users changed, and the profitability's changing, and they're under investigation. They got all sorts of problems. So they decide, well, we will be something different. And
right.
So the ticker's still FB for Facebook, but it's now called Metaverse. And they want to embrace a whole new generation of advanced technology, which may work, but may take 10 years. Well, is that realistic? And the answer is yes. And just think of Microsoft. We talked, in fact, we had the caller last week who called in, Dave from Spanaway, talked about his Microsoft holding. And Microsoft peaked in 2000. They had been selling software on CDs. Remember that? You got a CD, you had to install it, and you had to buy the updates, and then it was a real pain in the neck. And then if you're backing up, there was a lot of work to keeping that up. And then as the internet came along, they had to change their business format, and it took them almost 13, 15 years, something like that. I have to go back and look at the chart before they finally figured out who they were in this new world. And they became a dominant player in online cloud-based services. But that's not the same business that they were in. But that transition was it's called a business cycle. They were in a bear market business cycle, but people had so much faith in the company that they just held in there, even though they weren't making gains that the rest of the market was doing. They were treading water for more than a decade.
But they did get it done. Yeah, they did. And that's the key. That's the same basis we run our portfolios on. When the market changes, we know we have to change the composition of what we're doing. You can't keep the same portfolio regardless of what's going on out there and make any progress. Things change too much. And Microsoft was looking at the world they operate in, and it was either like, look, we either have to change or close, one or the other. And so change it was. And you have to be successful at that, and you have to be willing to adapt and then do the work to make sure you're heading the right direction. And that's what we do with portfolios.
So anytime somebody says, well, we're uncertain about the future,
yeah.
Duh.
Yeah.
The future's always uncertain. What that says is they don't know so much about the market, but you just learned a whole lot about the speaker who told you that.
Right.
They're trying to explain something which is unexplainable until it unfolds in front of us. And that's just simply going to take time. One day at a time is all we get, and that's what we have to deal with. And assuming that we can set it and forget it, the Ron Popeil stock market policy, just pick your asset allocation model, close your eyes, go home, and when you're ready for money, you'll open up the portfolio, and it'll just come pouring out. is a myth. It doesn't work.
It never quite happens that way. We are at the bottom of the hour here, Don. Time for us to get out of here and take another break. I'd like to remind everyone, if you're not getting our weekend review, which is our weekly email newsletter, you can sign up for that by sending us an email. Send it to help@iriradio.com. That's help@iriradio.com. Just put weekend review in the subject line and your first and last name in the body of the email, and you will begin receiving that on Monday. Again, if you'd like to talk to us here this afternoon, feel free to give us a call, 800-465-8770. It's 800-465-8770. You are listening to Investor Resources here on AM 770 KTTH. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Feliz Navidad, prospero año y felicidad.
Well, it is Christmas season, and we wish you all a Merry Christmas as you prepare for celebrating Christmas Day. Spend it with your family as best you can. When we're talking about the market, which is what we're doing here today, and if you want to participate in that conversation, there is a secret phone number, which is used on all the shows. So secret. It's special.
That's 800-465-8770.
Pick up your phone, punch in the buttons. Paul will put you on the call screen here so we can see you. We'll be glad to talk to you. Oh, in fact, I just looked at it. We've got Kent from Kent. And Kent, you're on the line with Don and Perry.
Hello. First of all, guys, Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you.
I certainly enjoy your program, very informative, and it's kind of a weekly event for me. Thanks a lot.
Well, thank you, sir.
Hey, no problem. My question has to do with, in terms of your portfolios for clients, is there a minimum initial investment to have you structure a portfolio for a client?
We do have three different models that we use for clients, and one of them is a $100,000 minimum, and the other two are a $250,000 minimum. And then, of course, you can always add more. And one at 100.
Yeah.
Okay. If you have an account that meets one of those minimums, and you have other smaller accounts, we'll work with them, but you have to have at least one that helps keep us in business.
Okay, all right. So that would be, say, $100,000. If you have that plus some other assets, is that what you're saying?
That's correct. That's correct.
Okay.
And if you go to our website, iriradio.com, at the bottom of the page, there's a red letter link that says ADV Part 2. You download that, and somewhere around page 10 or 11, it breaks down the portfolios and the expenses related there.
Okay, good. I'll do that. The second part of the question has to do with gold and silver. And way back, a couple months ago, when this the Treasury and other government people were talking about this temporary inflation and all this stuff, which I don't think a thinking person ever believed that. However, that's what they said, and obviously that is totally wrong, and we're seeing it big time. And what I don't quite understand is the fact that you would think that gold and silver would be reacting appropriately and, going up. And I know, again, we don't predict these things, but just in general, when you have a inflationary environment, I think historically gold and silver have performed pretty good. And I guess my question I know it's an individual preference, but to own the precious metals themselves or to have them stored somewhere, or maybe another way is just to invest in, say, mining stocks for gold, silver, and precious metals in general. So, it's a long-winded question, but anyway, that's could you comment?
Sure. Well, so one of your assumptions is that gold is inflation sensitive, gold and silver, inflation sensitive, and if inflation's rising, then they are going to do the same. And that's a bad assumption. They do follow inflation Sometimes, but not all the time. And that would require the use of some charts to show you that they are not always correlated. That's one of the problems with financial modeling, is one of the assumptions is that correlations between assets are always constant, and they are not. They change, and when they change, then people's assumption, their hindsight bias, is wrong, and they typically don't change that. Currently, gold has been falling. Not gold, let me use the ticker GLD, which is the Spider Gold Trust. While it has been very volatile, it has been falling since the summer of 2011. And I have up on, since you mentioned, I pulled it up on my chart, and since last August, it peaked, and even though it is now back above its lows, it is still down significantly. It had a rally last month, but so far, this is down almost 15% in the last 15 months. Even though we've had inflation rising, gold is falling. And the gold, when you enter the gold miners, you add a different type of risk than the one that supports most people's affection for gold, which is monetary systems are going to collapse and gold will become a currency. Now, there's no evidence for that, but that's the belief. Yes. And if you look at what is being sold on television and radio for gold, it's not gold as a defense for inflation or currency. It is numismatic gold. Look how unique this gold coin is from date XYZ. And it's the numismatic premium that is supporting the vendors of gold on the marketers of gold as an investment versus the manufacturers. I mean, the gold manufacturers, the gold mining companies, when gold prices are high, they sell the stuff off in the futures contract to lock in their cash flow expectations. And then the market makes adjustments afterwards. We have had gold in our portfolios periodically when it was rising. But I go back to July of, it was June or July of 11. We were on the radio on another station and said at that time, gold is peaking. And if you have it in your portfolio, now's an optimum time to capitalize, take your money and run. And we have clients who are gold advocates. And I don't care what we say, they are going to buy more. and so they went through 10 years of falling value locked up in their safe, but they felt good. Okay. So as long as you understand you're buying it because it makes you feel good, then you're just simply an example of what I was going to lead into this segment with, that the stock market is manic depressive. You know, there are days when things are working and I am hyper happy. And the next thing I know, man, I need an antidepressant.
And gold right now is a prime example of buying the narrative. You know, it's like, well, inflation is going up. Gold must be going up at the same time. Then let's buy gold. And that's why we never buy the narrative. You have to do a little more digging, look at the data, and then you find out, no, not this time. It's not going that way. And then you can just leave it out.
Very briefly explain, you know, what are some of the factors that you would look to say, okay, gold looks like it's going to be going up. I know you don't predict, but how do you know when to put somebody back into gold in precious metals, I'll say?
We look at recent prices.
Yep.
And the recent price trends, which it's easy to see on a chart. You can track them in multiple ways, but it's what's the current price trend doing? And then you need a stop loss. What if you're wrong? What if that trend suddenly reverses on you? Are you going to stay with it for how long before you say that that's too big a loss? I'm going to walk.
Okay. Sure. And the other thing is depending on the client and so forth, but I'm wondering about fees. Is that something you talk with clients on a private basis?
Well, the fees are in our ADV. I mean, they are what they are. So if you download that ADV, depending upon the portfolio you use, the fees are there.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, great.
So thanks for calling.
No problem. I really appreciate your responses, and I'll continue to listen. Thank you very much.
If you haven't, I didn't mean to cut you off. If you had another question, I mean, you're a good caller.
No, I think that does it for me right now, and I think I'll do the review that you suggested relative to the on your website, and then maybe we can just get an appointment and go from there.
You should take Sounds a look great. On our website. Go to the video tab and watch the last two videos and the January video. I think it'll answer a lot of your questions about how we process this stuff and what we're doing and why we don't do the standard Kool-Aid portfolio stuff.
Yeah, well, I've read all about the modern portfolio, these books on it and so forth, and I know there's a local Puget Sound person going named that's very much into diversification overseas and value and small cap, et cetera, et cetera. But I understand you have a very different approach, and that's what is intriguing to me. So I will do my homework, and I'll get on that website and take a look.
If you're a reader, since you're a reader, you should read the Misbehavior of Markets. Misbehavior of Markets by Mandelbrot. Yeah. It's paperback on Amazon, about $21 or $22. It is an enlightening read, and as far as our financial approach, it changed our lives.
Wow! Okay. So. And it won't give me won't end up as a manic depression person.
No, it's not written for mathematicians. No, it's an
eye opener.
It's a great read.
I just wanted to make sure what I was getting into. Okay.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, Kent.
Okay, guys. Hey, again, Merry Christmas to you, and thank you so much for your answers. Appreciate it.
Merry Christmas to you. And that leaves an open phone line. The number is 800-465-8770. Are we break time here?
We are. We're right up against the break. Might as well. Stop right now. It's a great spot. I'd like to remind everyone that we do have our monthly market update coming up Saturday, January 8th, and you can register for that by going to irradio.com. That is irradio.com, and we will send you a link, and you'll be ready to go on Saturday morning, January 8th. If you'd like to talk to us today, feel free to give us a call, 800-465-8770. It's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Hear what I hear. Said the night wind to the little lamb. Do you see what I see?
Do you see what I see?
Way up in the sky, little lamb. Do you see what I see?
Do you see what I see?
A star dancing in the night with a tail.
Well, Christmas is an important season, especially if you've got kids in the house. You know, it's a lot of fun. We get focused on gift giving and celebration. But this celebration of Christmas is just the precursor to the important celebration that happens on Easter. That is what confirmed the purpose of Christmas. I hope you enjoy this holiday season with your family, but remember why we celebrate. That last call was really interesting from Kent, and as I mentioned in there, I had planned on opening the segment with Mr. Market is a manic depressive,
right.
and actually our first segment really illustrated that because with the current forecast going into next year, Goldman Sachs is manic about next year, and Morgan Stanley is depressive.
Correct.
So there we are.
Take
two,
pick. Yeah.
Two big Wall Street firms, and they represent or they illustrate the manic depressive nature of the market. And in addition to that, we have what's called the smart money, dumb money indicators in the market.
Right.
And the smart money is supposed to be on Wall Street. And when you look at these two big firms who are taking opposite positions, you say, well, which one of them smart?
Right. Hey, and that brings up a good point, right? It just popped into my head. If one of them happens to be right, you will never stop hearing about it. But when one of them is wrong, you'll never hear about it again. So
that's true.
They only want to talk about it if they were right. So
somebody will have to dig up the mistake out of the archives somewhere.
That one's not going to be talked about. That's right.
So institutional investors, for the most part, happen to be pretty optimistic for next year. At the same time, they are building up massive short positions, betting that there's a big downside risk to their optimism.
How about that? Yeah, if that's not a little bit of a major uncertainty and manic depressive outlook on the market, I don't know what is. That's amazing.
So Smart Money Confidence Survey, it jumped to 77%, which is the highest since late April of last year. Now, dumb money, that's retail investor money and small fund manager money, so we get lumped into the category.
That's us, yeah.
That's us. It's the lowest since April of 2020, and it has dropped to 30%, which was reflected in recent exit of money by retail investors from mutual funds and a lot of small fund money managers. They manage less than $100 million. And people have been tired of losing money the last month, and they're just saying enough's enough because there are no stop losses in those models.
That's
and they don't know when they're going to quit. There's no adaptation other than it'll work out in the end.
Time.
Just wait. Just hang on.
Yep.
Yeah, hang on. That's what's the problem here? Well, the problem is that nobody loves downside volatility. But if you don't have volatility, that means you don't have any upside.
If there's no volatility, you have no prospects of making any money. You can buy things without volatility. Go buy a CD. You know, there's no volatility there. You know exactly going in what you're going to get, and it's almost nothing. And so that volatility is absolutely necessary, or gains in the market just will not come.
So the quickest way to out yourself as an amateur investor is to post online comments mocking other investors what you think are dumb in decisions that they made.
And there are plenty of them out there, boy. It doesn't take long to find those. There's plenty of people out there doing that, and it just illustrates that person doesn't really know what the market is about and doesn't know what it takes to be in the market long-term to make money.
So one of the illustrations I used earlier today was that when you take a road trip and you run into road construction and have to take a detour that was not planned, it upsets your plans, you accommodate that. Well, let me remind you that the road to wealth isn't freshly paved blacktop. It often looks more like a mud fight with a knife. I mean, it's really messy and dirty, and it's disruptive, and you need a process and a set of rules that says, this is how I'm going to deal with this. This is what I'm going to do when I run into trouble, instead of saying, oh, what do I do now? Well, many people just play ostrich, stick their head in the sand and say, it'll all work out in the end. That's the mantra from financial advisors.
Always. Yep. That's their deal.
And when we used to use big institutional firms to manage client money, and that was, we call and say, hey, what's going on here, man? What are you guys doing? This looks like you're messing up. But they say, just be patient. It'll all work out in the end. So here's what you tell the people to hold their hand and calm their nerves. And that works until the market really tanks. And then that didn't work.
Then you need a different talk, but we're still not going to do anything. You know, if the market's headed down, so are your clients' portfolios. And that's when we realized we had to move on, because as fiduciary advisors, it's hard to justify sitting down with somebody and saying, well, you know, you just lost 40% of your portfolio, but that's the way this is supposed to work, which is what happens if you're in the pie chart. And that's not right. That is not right for anyone, but that's where you are. If you're hanging onto that pie chart for security, especially in a down market, it's not going to be there. And it's not reasonable to do that to anyone, let alone people who are paying you to invest their money.
Which requires a great deal of trust, which we take very seriously. We are fiduciaries. We're fiduciaries in every engagement, all the time, 100% of the time. That was a decision that was made years ago, not just something that was handled or decided recently. And it's important, when you're talking to a financial advisor, you're trying to figure out, are they really fiduciaries? Just ask them, do they have any licenses that allow them to sell something other than the portfolio work they're doing? If they have multiple licenses, then they're fiduciaries part of the time. Which part are they using with you? And I mean, I've had this with a number of clients who have figured out that their advisor is really covering up that part of the time they kind of slip in some transactions that are commission driven. So
absolutely. And when they stopped acting as a fiduciary with you, there's no red light that goes on to tell you, whoa, wait a minute. They're just a salesperson selling me stuff. There's no way for you to know, and they like it that way. They would rather have you thinking of them as a fiduciary all the time, looking out for your best interests above their own, which is what a fiduciary is required to do, but that's not what they do. That is what we do. We're fiduciaries all the time, and you know, Don and I, before we merged our firms, we both made that decision individually years ago that that's the way we were going to run our business, and we've never changed, never looked back.
So let's move on to some of the abbreviations that the industry used, one of which is looking at the last big bear market, which 08, 09. Mm-hmm. I'm going to skip the pandemic one because it lasted such a short period of time. 08, 09 was precipitated with excess leverage in the housing market, created tons of bonds, mortgage bonds for investors, many of which collapsed. And not to worry, because we taxpayers bailed out many of those firms that owned them.
Yeah, great.
Couldn't have those big name firms going bankrupt. That would look bad. It would be tarnishing the industry's image. So we bailed them out. And we abbreviate that GFC, Great Financial Collapse. Well, we have another one for the current market environment called the Great Resignation. It's one of the buzziest economic stories of the year. And what so often happens here is it doesn't really represent what's really going on. There are a lot. We look at jobs, employment numbers, unemployment, new hires and stuff. And in this case, quitters. What's the quit rate? How many people are quitting their job? And the industry or many analysts are saying, oh, my goodness, this can't be good.
It's a
people
lot.
People are quitting.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a lot. They don't want to go to work. And employers are having a hard, we know employers are having a hard time finding people to do the work, but the quit rate is a misrepresentation of what's happening. The quit rate is actually positive for the lower income workers in our society, because they're not quitting to go home, kick up their feet, turn on the TV and drink a beer and wait for the unemployment check to arrive. That's not what they're doing. They are saying, I can get more money working for the guy on the next block. I'm done here. I'm moving forward.
So they are quitting their job, but it's to take a better job, not to leave the workforce. So it's actually much more like a free agency in football, where all of a sudden everybody can go out and try for a new team and get a better deal. They're getting a better deal right now, and they're taking advantage of it. And that's a really good thing.
So I have personal experience with this. I have a granddaughter in Utah. And she was working for a company, minimum wage down there. And I mean, she wanted more, and the company wouldn't, you know, it wasn't in the deal. She found another job with a 50% pay raise and benefits.
There you go.
And about 4 months later, the old firm calls back and say, we'll give you another raise above what you're paying, plus benefits and more freedom on your time and stuff. So she quit again to go to work for even more money than she had, and it was with the original firm. Register for our stock market update, January 8th. Go to IRIradio.com. That's IRIRadio.com. And lower left-hand corner is the registration link. A couple of clicks, your name, address, your name and your email, and you'll be set for that. You want to talk to us during the week, the number is 800-317-9119. 800-317-9119. We're out of here. Lord willing, we'll be back next week. God bless you, your family, and the United States of America.